So this evening, I'd like to talk about how practice sometimes feels like it unfolds in layers, and how our experience sometimes unfolds in layers. And this talk was inspired last year sometime when somebody talked to me about feeling like they were a little bit stuck in their practice, feeling like they'd come to a plateau and they had no longer had a feeling about making progress. This person said that things were better than they had been, but the year before, but there just was this feeling like the meditation wasn't working anymore. So that was the kind of inspiration for the practice. Drink some water. For the inspiration for this talk. One of the ways that the Buddha described who we are as human beings is through a set of qualities or aspects of our being called the five aggregates. And these five aggregates break down our experience mostly through the way the mind functions. So one of the five aggregates is the body, so the body being part of our psychophysical being. And the other four of the five aggregates are how the mind, or ways the mind works. And three of those are pretty low-level functioning of the mind. They're really very basic ways the mind works, and they include consciousness, just this knowing of what's happening, feeling, which is a sense of whether something is pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral, and perception, and that is simply recognizing what we're experiencing, a very simple, basic recognition of red, blue, hot, cold. But it can also take levels of recognizing, podium, paper, bell, that kind of thing is also perception. And then on top of that, on top of those three aspects of our mind, are built all of our emotions and moods and reactions. Everything else goes into this fourth category in the mind called the mental formations, which is a pretty good word for it. It's formations of the mind on top of other things, on top of perceptions, on top of feelings, on top of consciousness. And the Buddha described these five aggregates with some really beautiful analogies. But this one in particular, this one called the mental formations, it's basically where we experience most of our daily life experience, where we experience, all the feelings and emotions and moods that come into our consciousness, is through this mental formation. And the way the Buddha described, he gave an analogy for this aggregate. He said, it's like a plantain tree. Now that may not make much sense to you, but what a plantain tree is, it's basically a banana tree. And if you look at a plantain tree, it's got a pretty thick looking trunk, about that big. And it looks pretty solid. But if you start trying to find the hardwood of this tree by peeling off the layers, because mostly the plantain tree is like it's got a shoot up the side that goes to a leaf, and another shoot up that goes to another leaf, and they're all wrapped around each other. So as you take a leaf, one of these huge banana leaves, and pull it down, you pull off part of the stalk of the tree. And if you keep doing that, you keep pulling and pulling and pulling, you wind up with a pile of leaves in front of your feet and nothing in front of you. So this is the analogy the Buddha gave for these mental formations, that they look really solid. Our experience of all of this stuff that happens in our life, it feels really solid. It feels like, yeah, that's there. But when we start looking at it, when we start actually touching into our actual experience and saying, well, what is this piece here? And what is this piece here? We start seeing that it's just layers. It's just layers, like the layers of the plantain tree. So much of our mental life, a lot of the habits and patterns we have in our life, have this kind of layered quality to them. And as we move through our practice, as we start paying attention to some of these layers of experience, sometimes we can find that some of the layers start to come off, like pulling one of those leaves off the plantain tree. And that feeling of something letting go, of a habit or pattern that has restricted us or kept us tied to a certain way of thinking about ourselves. When we let that go, there can be a real big feeling of release. We have this feeling of freedom when we let go of a layer of habits and patterns. So for instance, just as an example of this, for myself, I used to really have a strong identification of myself being a really miserable person. It was, you know, it was pretty much the way I thought of myself. And anytime there was any other experience, like happiness or something that would contradict it, I would notice that and say, yeah, but what I really am is miserable. And at some point in my practice, and I don't know exactly when this fell away, but it's no longer true that I consider myself a miserable person. So this is one of those layers it's a kind of a layer that has fallen away in my experience. That restriction or belief about myself, which seems so true and so real and so solid, it's just like vanished. It's evaporated over the years of practice. So as we experience that kind of letting go of these patterns and habits that we have, these beliefs, we can experience a real feeling of freedom. It's great when we let go of something like that. But what happens over time, I mean, and there can just be such a feeling of release, we figure like, wow, you know, I've got it figured out now. I understand. I understand how this works and, you know, I'm never going to be unhappy again. But what happens is that, you know, we've let go of a layer and it's like there's this releasing of that layer. But over time, we begin to experience and our world is in a new place now. You know, we've got a new experience without that layer. And we begin to notice the subtle sufferings and with the subtler sufferings and tensions and habits and patterns at the new layer. And we figure, what's wrong? You know, I was happy for so long, and now I'm noticing all this suffering again. You know, what am I doing wrong? We think we've gone backwards. We figure we've blown it somehow. But we haven't actually gone backwards. We're basically starting to penetrate a new layer of experience, which has its own sufferings associated with it. If we, you know, wanted to go back to the place we were before, where we were feeling so free and happy, we'd basically have to put the old layer back on to let it go again. And we can't actually do that. You know, it's gone. So that layer's already dropped. And we're in a new place now. so we're experiencing new suffering now. So the practice is to understand this new layer, the ways it manifests in our experience. So we need to understand the layer of now, the suffering of now, the habits of now, the patterns of what's happening now. And in my experience, one of the most helpful ways to go through these layers is to simply not have resistance to whatever is happening, not have any resistance to this new layer. So non-resistance and awareness of our current experience is the path through the layers. The non-resistance piece of it was really beautifully described by Ajahn Sumedho in a beautiful three-word phrase that for me is a real helpful mantra as a way to just be with the experience. It's like this. It's like this. Fear is like this. Terror is like this. Greed is like this. Just whatever's happening right now, it's like this. So these layers that we have, they're built of, like the plantain tree, they're pretty firm in many ways. It's a pretty solid thing that we have constructed over the years. And working through these layers can sometimes take a long time. They may not disappear very suddenly. In fact, as the example I gave about being a miserable person, you know, that one just kind of dissolved over the years. I never really actually saw it disappear. It's just one day I realized, gee, you know, that's not the way I see myself anymore. And there's a really nice analogy that the Buddha gives for this process of waking up and letting go, letting go, letting go of all of the things that we cling to. And I love this analogy because it so fits with my own experience, which feels like a pretty slow, steady process and not something that's like all these sudden, deep insights. You know, I got some of those. I get some of those occasionally, but most of the time it doesn't feel that way. It's just, you know, today feels like yesterday pretty much. But when I look back over 10 years, wow, there's a huge difference. And the analogy that the Buddha gives about this process of letting go is that it's like a rope. He says, if there's been a shipwreck and a ship is, you know, crashed on the shore and the ropes from the ship are sitting there on the sand, and over the years, they're worn by the sand and the wind and the sun. Now, they slowly start to decay. The ropes start to decay. And the threads that hold the rope together as a rope begin to dissolve. And at some point, you know, the rope, there may be one little fiber, one little filament holding the rope together, and then one day it just separates. And it's no big, huge thing. It's so subtle that you may not even experience it. It's just a very subtle thing. And he says some of our letting go is like that. It's the mindfulness and the wisdom and the awareness functions like the sun and the sand and the wind to wear down our clinging, our suffering. And for me, it seems so true that's a way that in my own experience, things have let go. They've let go over long periods of time. But sometimes breaking through a layer can have a very sudden, like impactful insight feeling. I think maybe, I'm not sure of this, but maybe it's because we're there at the moment when that last, or when a little piece of clinging really lets go, it can have a really strong sense of, wow, I really see that. And I've experienced that in a few ways. One in particular for me around self-hatred and unworthiness. On one retreat, I had been looking at this movement of mind towards self-hatred and unworthiness over a long period on this particular retreat, and had been looking at it for years throughout retreats. And at some moment on that retreat, I was observing the thinking, the thought process around the self-hatred, and at some moment it was just crystal clear, oh, these are just thoughts. They're simply thoughts. And there was, at that point, a recognition that the whole self-hatred grew because there was the identification with the thought, that the thought wasn't, the thought came first and the identification came later. The thought was impermanent. So there's, you know, it's like when the thought goes, the feeling of the self-hatred doesn't have to stay around. So it was really clear. And in that moment, it's like, wow. And that moment was very powerful in aiding the letting go of that layer. It was a layer that got released. And I actually didn't quite believe that it would be released, because the pattern had been with me for so long that in that moment there was also the recognition of, well, yes, this is the understanding for this moment, but this insight is impermanent. So it doesn't mean that I've eliminated this pattern of self-hatred. And it is true that it's not completely gone, but there was such a layer of it that let go that for quite a long time, I think a year or even longer, it was like it was gone. But then I started, it was like that when I talk about the layer that lets go and you feel like it's gone, but then you start touching into the subtler suffering. And I began to see very subtle movements in the mind towards that pattern, towards that habit of self-hatred and unworthiness. So it's nowhere near at that level that it was before. It's kind of like, you know, how we sometimes feel like these patterns are ruts in our mind, and it's like a ball comes along, and if it gets anywhere near that rut, it's just in there. It's like the groove is deep like this, and if the ball comes along, it's stuck in the bottom of that rut, and there's no way we can get out of there. But what it felt like to me happened in that moment is that the rut went from there to there, so that it is now much more easy for to see myself in there and to roll out of it when it happens. So what I'm trying to say here is that, you know, the patterns, we have all of these layers, and the patterns of where those layers are born from can go very deep. It can be very, very deep in our experience. One of my teachers, Sayadaw Upandita, gave a two-week Dharma talk on this topic about different layers of experience. And he talked about the layers of things that will erupt in our actions, and then a subtler level of things being patterns and habits. This is patterns and habits, like, for instance, an anger or an aversion that would erupt in some kind of an action. And then a subtler level is the anger or habit that would erupt into thought, but not into action. And then deeper under that is this inclination towards the anger in general. And so as we work through these layers, I think we end up getting closer. We start out working through the layers of the habits and patterns that are really gross, you know, that erupt in the ways that we really are destructive to ourselves and to other people in the world. And then it works into the thought patterns that are destructive about the way we work with ourselves, you know, the ways we are detrimental to ourselves in our own mind. And then it goes into the actual very subtle tendencies that are pre-erupting in thought even. It's just the inclination of the mind towards aversion, towards greed. And as we move through these layers of our experience, I think we kind of move through these different subtleties, more and more subtle. It gets easier and easier to not act out. And then we really start to see how our mind is going nuts. And that's pretty painful. And then we start to see this inclination of the mind to act out. So it's very interesting to watch how we move through these layers. We don't know how long it'll take to move through a layer. Sometimes it takes years, sometimes it takes weeks, sometimes it takes days or hours or even minutes. You know, something can come up and it can just be really worked through very quickly. But the instructions are always the same. No matter where we are in our practice, there's no different instructions whether we're at the grosser layers or the more subtle layers. Observe what's actually happening with as little resistance as possible. And if there is resistance, notice the resistance. So those two pieces, basically. We need to be honest with ourselves about if there is resistance to looking at these things. And if there is, we have to look at the resistance. So we need to notice what our relationship to our experience is. We need to notice whether we're resisting what we're seeing, whether there's any kind of pulling away from it or wanting to go towards it. I had an experience pretty clearly along these lines of layers dropping away on a recent retreat. So I'll describe this to you. This took place over a couple of weeks. So it's kind of a long story to tell you how this unfolded. But I think it'll give you a sense of what I mean by paying attention to what's happening with as little resistance as possible and noticing the resistance when it's there, and to see how this kind of thing functions, how the mindfulness works with strong habits and patterns. So on this retreat, this was in Burma, this last time I was in Burma a few months ago. And it's a very different type of practice. I had never gone to this monastery before, never practiced with this teacher before, so it was a completely new style of practice for me. It was one of very open, it wasn't a very focused, concentrated practice. In fact, he did not want us to get concentrated in the usual fashion. He said, you've got, you know, very basic instructions. The only work you give your mind is to know when you're present and to try to stay present. And every now and then, check your attitude about what's happening. And that was it. Those were the instructions. So it was a very different style of practice for me, and it opened a whole new experience and exploration of being mindful. And one of the things I noticed in walking meditation is I started to really notice a tension and a pressure in my throat and a feeling of resistance in the walking meditation. So I was just trying to be with that. And I particularly noticed it when I turned around and started a new path. It was like it would just flare up really strongly when I turned around and started to walk in another direction. And I was just paying attention to it and checking what my attitude about the whole situation was, I don't want to be doing this. I don't want to be practicing right now. And when I noticed that, when that got brought into consciousness, it just made the whole thing easier to be with. Just like I could just sit there and notice I didn't want to practice. The resistance didn't go away, or that feeling of contraction and pressure didn't go away, but it just brought some ease around it. So some days later, again, and this, it seemed to be pretty consistent. You know, whenever I'd go out for walking, there'd just be this pressure and tension. And one day I noticed a feeling of resistance, a strong feeling of resistance. And I noticed for myself what helped, because the teacher had said, you know, notice the resistance. He had really clearly said, if the attitude of the practice is resistance, you really have to pay attention to the resistance. And I'd found that that trying to pay attention to the resistance in a direct way didn't seem to be very effective for me. And so I took a much lighter attitude toward it. And I just let it be one of the many things that was happening. So I was seeing, hearing, smelling, touching on my feet and moving and feeling this resistance. And you know, it was just one of the many things that was going through. And that was a little bit easier to be with, this feeling of resistance. And then, as I kept observing this whole process of this resistance with a little less resistance, one day I noticed a feeling of depression when I was walking. It was low grade, it was subtle, but it was definitely depression. And there, I noticed several things about it. I didn't like it. I thought there was, it wasn't supposed to be there. I thought that it was a problem with me that there was depression there. I thought it wasn't supposed to be there. And then I noticed that when the depression wasn't there and there was happiness there, there was the corresponding feeling that this is the way it's supposed to be. And so I saw there was a kind of a connection between those two. You know, that the one fed the other, actually. That the feeling of happiness being supposed to be there made it true. I mean, if I believe that happiness is supposed to be there, it's true that depression is not supposed to be there. So the belief in one fueled the belief in the other. I also noticed that this depression could arise out of calm and peace. That when I was calm and peaceful, if I wasn't paying close attention to the calm and peace, the depression would appear. So I observed this experience by noticing three basic states of mind around this depression. The first was noticing the resistance to the depression, which was there pretty frequently, that feeling of not wanting the depression to be there. It's not supposed to be there. And then noticing when the depression was there without the resistance, and then noticing when the depression wasn't there. So just these very simple, notice when it's there, notice when it's not there, notice when I'm resisting it. Pretty basic level of paying attention. And this kind of mindfulness that I learned on this retreat, I really felt like it was very applicable to the way we can practice in our daily lives. And that's partly why I'm going through this example. Because this kind of awareness about an emotion is something that we can do in our daily lives. It doesn't take sitting down in meditation and being really deeply concentrated to know when I'm depressed, to know when I'm not depressed, to know when I'm feeling a sense of this shouldn't be here. This can be something that we do in our daily lives. Some days later, I began to notice that the resistance to the depression itself, so in noticing this fluctuation between these three states of mind, that the resistance to the it's like it just dawned on me. It's like, oh, this resistance to the depression is simply, you know, a natural occurrence of the mind. You know, of course the mind doesn't want to be depressed. You know, it's like, oh, this is just a natural thing that happens in the mind. And with that recognition that, oh, this is just a very natural thing to have happen in the mind, I recognized that there had been some belief around that resistance that it shouldn't have been there. That the resistance shouldn't have been there. And so with that recognition, I still just watched those three states come and go. But there was much more of a... They were all just seen as very natural processes of mind. It was not thinking at any point that any one of them shouldn't be there. just that this is just what the mind is doing. It's going through these cycles of resisting and then depression and then not depression and then depression and then resisting. And it was just what the mind was doing. And then some days later, I noticed that I was very calm when I was walking, very peaceful. I noticed the depression wasn't there. But I noticed at that moment a very strong vigilance, you know, this like, ooh, really better pay attention, because I know that historically in this peaceful, quiet place, this depression can rear its head, you know, and it's true. Any time you get into a calm place, it's like all of your habits just form together and like shoot through that calmness and just wreak havoc on the calmness. So anytime there's calm or peace, it's if there's not a continuity of mindfulness there to really notice, wow, you know, notice calm, peace, those patterns and habits are going to take the opportunity and just leap in there. So I knew this, and so there was this very strong effort that came in to stay vigilant, to kind of watch that calm. And I checked the attitude around that. You know, what is my attitude around paying attention that vigilantly? And it seemed okay. You know, there wasn't a particular, didn't feel like there was a particular reactivity around it. But after a short time, I found myself getting really tired of this vigilance. It's like, I don't want to do this anymore. And I realized that there had been a reactivity that I hadn't really noticed. There'd been a feeling of a need for that vigilance because of fear that the depression would arise. And at that point, I could simply be with the fear of the depression arising. And depression did not arise. I was with another unpleasant state of the fear, but the depression itself did not arise. And the next meditation, the still posture meditation I moved into, which I do lying down on my back most of the time when I'm on retreat, as I went into that lying posture, I really started experiencing all the physical sensations that I had experienced around the depression, the tightness of the heart, the constriction in the throat. And that was really unusual because it hadn't been happening in the lying meditation. It had only been happening, or it had been mostly happening in the walking meditation. It was kind of odd. It kind of struck me that this experience was coming up again in the lying meditation. And yet because of the way I had been working over these couple of weeks, it was pretty easy. There wasn't any resistance to being with those sensations. The depression wasn't particularly there in the mind, but the physical sensations were there. And so I just was resting with those physical sensations. And they were kind of focused around the area of the heart. And as I let the attention focus on the contractions and the pressure, it's like they got really big. All of those feelings, they got really, really big. And at some point it flipped and it became metta. It became loving kindness. It became connection. It became openness. And it was incredible to see that flip. And yet the next thing that happened was that the mind came up with these thoughts. This is stupid. This is sappy. This is corny. And I saw those thoughts. I saw them just as thoughts. And I realized at that moment that there had been a reactivity or an aversion, in a sense, to a feeling of that metta that had been the basic root of the depression. So the depression on the retreat, and as I said, this took place over a couple of weeks, the depression never came back in the same way. So it was as if I had worked through some kind of a layer of experience. Now, in that seeing of the metta, seeing the openness and connection, I also saw that there was more opening to be done, you know, that it wasn't complete yet, that it wasn't boundless, unconditional, boundless love that the Buddha describes. You know, it was an opening for me. And I saw there was more work to be done. And that's the next layer. And I didn't hit that layer on this retreat. It stopped there, basically. You know, I didn't particularly go back to that depression, but I didn't go any deeper into that opening or that connecting either. So we go through these layers, we explore, and if we can be non-resistant, even to the resistance, it's helpful if you cannot resist the resistance even. This kind of thing can unfold on its own. The mindfulness really guides us through. If we can be patient enough, the mindfulness guides us through our layers. Sometimes when a layer drops away, we can start to get a little complacent about paying attention to the deeper patterns and habits that kind of underlie that layer. So, for example, if a strong pattern of self-consciousness drops away after a period of time, we might think it's not so necessary to pay attention when patterns of self-consciousness appear because they're no longer quite ruling our lives in the way they had in the past. And so we think, oh, you know, I've kind of figured that one out. But we have to be cautious there because as I described those layers of more subtle habits and patterns, the tendencies are still there. And if we are not tending to watching, if we're not paying attention to watching the more subtle levels as they come up, they can recreate new patterns, new habits that are not so skillful, add a new layer back on top, essentially. So it's helpful to keep noticing every time we go through. And if what we're experiencing is the feeling of freedom, that's great. But be honest about when these feelings of just a little glitch of self-consciousness comes back in, or self-hatred, or misery, or whatever our pattern is that we're working with. Don't push it away as, oh, it's not there anymore, I know I got rid of that. Let it be there. One of the things that we can learn through this practice is to be fearless about whatever arises in our minds. We really do not need to be afraid of it if we're mindful. So as we start to see through these layers, we also begin to touch in just a little bit to the Buddhist teaching around not-self. This teaching that there's no one there basically running the show. What appears to be a self, and as we start to really notice these layers, as we pay attention to the layers of experience, we start to notice that they do fall away, or that, you know, we're seeing outer layers fall away. And things that we thought were ourself are no longer ourself. Like the miserable person that I was is no longer there. And as we observe carefully, we start to see these layers dissolving. And underneath is simply another layer, and another layer, and another layer. What seems so solid as a self is simply a whole bunch of habits and patterns and layers built up over time that looks as solid as that banana tree. But with the practice, we start peeling the layers away. And we peel them away and peel them away and peel them away. And eventually we come to nothing. There's nobody running the show. It doesn't mean that there's nothing there. There's process, there's movement, there's change. But there's nothing solid and stable in the middle. There's no heartwood in the middle that says, I am that. There's nothing there that's that solid. It's actually our partly it's the reactivity and resistance and contraction around experience that solidifies that sense of self. There can also be a layer-like pattern to our going through the positive stages of our practice. As we move through more blissful experiences and deeper insights, we can sometimes, especially early in our practice, experience some very interesting things around our meditation. You know, with a little bit of concentration starts to come in, we can start to have a sensations of being really large or really heavy or just really solid. You know, there can be some physical shifts of perception that really let you see, wow, something is different here. And typically they're also pleasant experiences. So the experience of the mind and body as we start practicing and begin our meditation over the first few years can produce some of these experiences. And we think, oh, this is what it's supposed to be like. But the interesting thing about especially some of these experiences that I've described, some of these perceptual distortions around concentration, is that over time the mind begins to understand them in a different way. And then they don't feel so unusual anymore. So there's a shift in our relationship to those experiences. And sometimes we think, it almost even just feels like, you know, they don't happen anymore. Sometimes it feels like they don't even happen anymore for a long, long time. And it's like, well, what am I doing wrong? What am I doing wrong in my meditation? I'm not feeling these things. Well, it's like we've gone through a layer in the meditation. And now we have to let go of the way that layer was in order to move into the next deepening of the layer. The meditation changes as we progress, and we can never assume we know what it is supposed to feel like. We just cannot know what our meditation is supposed to feel like. And sometimes even, you know, as we progress even deeper into the practice, we can land into a new layer that feels like things are just flat. Like, you know, there's nothing much happening. But this can actually represent a deepening of the meditation. There can be a place of calm, of neutrality, and things don't seem so interesting. And part of the reason they're not so interesting anymore is because there's no longer so much movement towards pleasant and unpleasant. And it can be really unsettling at first to be in this place. It's just like, well, what's wrong with me? But it's we're moving into a level, a deeper level of letting go. And any time we move to new levels this way, it can feel wrong. It's like something's wrong. What am I doing wrong? And in my practice, both in going through the layers of the mental formations and going through all of the letting go of clinging and the miserable person and the self-hating person, letting go of all of that, and in the going in through all the deepening of the meditation, what I've really come to in the end is that you just can't know what is supposed to be happening. And the best thing to do is just to pay attention to it. It doesn't matter what's happening. if we just bring mindfulness to it and notice how it changes, how it flows. Whether we're hitting this place of neutrality and feeling like this doesn't feel right, if we hit that place, the thing to do is to pay attention. Be mindful of it. Notice that feeling of neutrality, that feeling that this doesn't feel right. And sometimes it can seem like, in fact, what happens as we go through the practice is that it almost feels like things get more and more ordinary. That it's just living life. Nothing special. But it's lived with this awakeness. And we notice that there's not so much reactivity when things happen anymore. There's not the feeling of being whipped around by the winds of the world or being whipped around by our mind. And there's a really deep sense of balance, of equanimity in that happens. But it feels really ordinary. It's like nothing special, just being awake. But it's very transformative. And in that awake, we begin to really experience and touch into all the beautiful qualities of mind, of loving kindness, compassion, tranquility, joy, equanimity. And the path is just through all these layers. So those are my thoughts about layers, and we have some time, so if anybody has any comments or questions or anything you'd like to share.
As you were describing the layers, it occurred to me that perhaps the outer layers of the plantain tree were family stuff, that the reactivity that we would all be able to identify as ours or our blood relations. As in your experience, as you get in deeper, is it less easy to trace this to family of origin? Is it easier not to identify with the conditions that cause more subtle reactivity?
What I find is that it's like a shift has to happen as you move to a new layer, because you've been paying attention at a more gross level for a while, and then you're not attuned to the way the patterns and habits come into being at the subtler level. And so it takes a shift, and it's harder to see initially when you go down to a new layer, and you have to kind of understand and start to look a little more carefully. So initially it feels harder, but over time, my experience over time is that, well, two pieces. One, that family of origin is probably the hardest set of patterns and habits to let go of. You know, that going back and visiting, particularly with one of my family members, will just, you know, knows how to push my buttons. We grew up with those buttons together. So yeah, I mean, those are some of the deepest and hardest to let go of. But at the same time, I find there's a much more ease with being in the family situation, with not trying to want it to be something other than it is. You know, that's a lot of what we do with our families. We think it shouldn't be this way.
I heard today something about there's nothing wrong with negativity. It's negative negativity that's the problem.
Thank you, Betsy.
I'm Sean.
Hi, Sean.
And I was thinking about what you said as we certainly gain the focus and shine the light of mindfulness on those things that come to mind. And it seems that they dissolve, especially things that are based on fear. Mm-hmm. If I can find those layers, sometimes it's not a few layers before the fear is clear, but when I do shine the light of mindfulness on that fear, it seems to dissipate. So I was relating it to your analogy of the ropes on the beach.
Mm-hmm.
And to paraphrase someone, sunlight is sometimes the best disinfectant, and it works for fear, I think. Yeah,
it's true. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really think bringing fear into the light is so powerful. And, you know, it's really one of the things that is true about the difficult mind states, especially ones like fear and aversion and greed. They feed on ignorance. They feed on not being seen. They get stronger when they're not seen. But when they're seen and acknowledged and bowed to, they seem to... It's like they actually, that's what they want. They want to be acknowledged. And it's like, okay. They calm down a little bit. Yeah, so that's so true. Thank you. Victor.
That reminded me of a talk of a gentleman that I can't remember the name a few Sundays ago. And he mentioned he worked with prisoners in San Quentin, Jacques. I forget his last name.
Vermeil.
And he mentioned three things that he found useful in, with working these with these individuals in prison. And you can run away, you can hide, or you can face the situation. Mm-hmm. And the trouble with these individuals in prison is they hadn't faced situations before and they found themselves in trouble. But it seems for me that it's, you don't know that you're running or hiding in order to face the situation. So it's the discovering what are you not paying attention to that is the trick. And once you can find that, then that's like a key to a door.
Yeah, yeah, it's true. And the way to find that key is really to just pay attention in the present moment. It may not be immediately clear, but over time, if you keep paying attention, it will give you a clue. Yeah. And you, this gentleman back here, did you have something you wanted to say?
Yeah, I had a moment with my brother today in work, and that metta mindfulness was very nice to experience. The process of accepting and surrendering and serenity and then understanding and then feeling that mindfulness of the, did I drink enough water? Did I eat? Did I sleep enough? Okay, breathe. Relax. Be at ease. And just feel it and then let it go. And then joy came. Mm-hmm. And then I was able to feel love and understanding, compassion. And it happened very quickly. Almost simultaneously, one dot, second after second after second.
Uh-huh.
And it felt really good. And I was able to just see that my brother is going to be my brother for a long time. As much as he's changed in the years, he's still my older brother, and he's got some formations of the mind that I need to accept and surrender. And then I get that serenity that he's just being who he is, and that's okay. And I'm just being who I am, and that's okay. But that holding on to it and feeling it, and kind of, you know, going from that to the resolution, and then finally that closure where I see that layer just falling.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm entering into another layer of letting it fall because my brother and I have been working together, and it's been quite an endeavor.
That's beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. That was very beautiful. So we need to stop. Thank you. Thank you for your attention.